This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So we finally have some meaningful coverage on the latest blight on the Jay Inslee record, a series of blights, the most recent one being his handling of the Employment Security Department scandal. It turns out it's easier for Nigerian fraudsters to get their unemployment benefits than it is from Washingtonians. Except, of course, they're not actually due any Washington State unemployment benefits, those Nigerian fraudsters. You guys are. And yet here we are, months later, still no one paying any price. No one losing a job over what happened. Susie Levine, the ESD head, she's still in her position. No consequences for handing over hundreds of millions of dollars to fraudsters. Oh, and now ESD seems to be at least trying to cover their tracks. So right now, State Auditor Pat McCarthy is doing five total audits. She's trying to figure out exactly what happened. Why did Nigerian fraudsters get hundreds of millions of dollars? How can we prevent this from happening in the future? How can we prevent this from happening again? So she's been trying to do this investigation. Except Susie Levine is standing in her way. So we got a hold of a memo, first reported in the Seattle Times via a public disclosure request. And in this memo from the auditor to Levine, Levine is accused of management interference, of trying to limit the interviews that the state auditor's office is trying to get with key employees who actually know about some of the details of what happened. Levine is accused of delaying access to documents that the auditors actually need in order to conduct their review. And in this memo, Auditor McCarthy, a Democrat, said to Susie Levine, look, if you continue to do this, if you continue to hinder this investigation, we're also going to add to the long list of our findings that you are interfering, that management decided to get in the way and prevent us from doing our job. Now, of course, Levine says, what, us? We would never do something like that. What, are you crazy? They gave a statement to the Seattle Times. She's pretending that her agency loves the idea that they're being audited. They welcomed it from the start. They can't wait to get all of those findings so they can fix stuff. She said in the statement, we remain firmly committed to full transparency and are collaborating closely with the state auditor and her staff as we have all along. No, something tells me if you've been cooperating all along, probably wouldn't have received that memo from a member of your own party, an ally of Jay Inslee, putting pressure on you. Something tells me that would not have happened if you were cooperating all along, which you clearly were not. She is lying. It has gotten so bad that Democrats are calling this out, not just Pat McCarthy, the auditor, who again is a Democrat. But in the Times, there is a quote from Senator Karen Kaiser, Democrat from Des Moines, who calls out ESD and how poorly they are communicating both with the legislature and any of the legislators that are asking questions, but also the general public. At this point, I think a lot of our patience is worn thin. For heaven's sake, by now, their communication should be more under control, more responsive. This is what happens, folks, when you pay back friends or the politically well-connected people with important jobs that they are not qualified for. Susie Levine is not qualified for this position. And yet, despite giving hundreds of millions of dollars to scam artists, she holds this position. Remember, Governor Jay Inslee did not call her out, did not criticize Susie Levine at all. He refuses to acknowledge that it was his administration that is responsible for this. They are victims, he says. They are victims. Except they're not. Some of you guys are. Some of you guys who are listening to me right now, you are the victim. You're the one who tried for months, not days, not weeks, but months, to get your unemployment checks. And you had to jump through hoop after hoop after hoop, and then some more hoops, just to get that first check, only to have weeks later the check stop suddenly, for you to then jump through even more hoops. Susie Levine is an absolute nightmare. She does not know what she's doing. And as a result, the actual victims, you guys, have no recourse, yet she is protected. You can't even go to bed tonight thinking to yourself, well, at least this system is taken care of. At least the person responsible is no longer in a position of power to further victimize any more people in this state again. Nope. If anything, she'll get promoted. Knowing this state, she's probably up for a raise at some point, and she'll get it. Because that's what we do here. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So we're heading into Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's. And you're going to be hearing more and more and more about social distancing, the need for wearing masks. And we should have vaccines in the next couple of weeks starting to get deployed. Small numbers at first. They'll ramp up next year. But as a result of that, we're going to hear from more politicians and public health officials about the need to not get complacent. Just because the vaccines are coming doesn't mean you can get complacent. We're going to have more surges. And then we'll hear from just completely random people that the media likes to talk to about their thoughts on staying vigilant.
We have to do our diligent work to do the precautions so we stay away from this horrendous virus.
Thank you, lady speaking in a rather wordy way to Q13. Didn't really say anything worth hearing, but thank you for speaking and filling up some time in a feature report anyway. Now, the thing that I do think is worth mentioning in all of this is that if you want people to maintain COVID protocols, just don't count on the police to do your work, please. Don't be that snitch. Don't call 911. And the good news is, most police departments, most sheriff's offices, at least the ones that I'm aware of, are all taking the exact same position. They may not all do it publicly, but they're all saying pretty much the same thing here in Washington State, which is, yeah, we're not going to take care of this. Don't call us and snitch on your neighbors. If it's something absolutely egregious and we witness it, yeah, we might say something from an education standpoint. We're not throwing people in jail. We're not giving people tickets. We're not settling your issues with your neighbor. Sergeant Tim Meyer of the King County Sheriff's Office, for example, spoke to Q13 and said, hey, if you call 911 to snitch on your neighbors or anyone for breaking any of the COVID protocols, they're just going to tell you to go somewhere else.
When we do get complaints about social gatherings, persons not wearing face masks or honoring social distancing, they refer those people to the Department of Health or King County's own coronavirus hotline, and we have had great success.
So in other words, go pound sand. You are wasting their time.
We want to prioritize the resources that we have to really respond to those immediate life safety issues. King County is a large and diverse county. We're about twice the size of the state of Rhode Island. And so it's important that the sheriff's office and all of our partner agencies can be responsive.
So imagine being the person who calls 911 because your neighbor is having some friends over for a barbecue outside, although right now would be a really bad time. And I might just call 911 to say, hey, my neighbors are mind-numbingly stupid to have a barbecue at this point. But for the sake of my argument, let's just pretend it's summer. Because I don't know. What do people do right now? Christmas party. How about this? I'll play into my people. A Hanukkah party.
Nice.
Starting December 10th is the first day of Hanukkah. It starts really early this year. Which is good news for you. Seven crazy day of gift. You're not getting any.
Oh,
so,
darn.
Let's say you're that person who calls 911 because your neighbors are having a Hanukkah get-together. And you notice that they've got four people over the house. Oh, my gosh. Imagine calling 911 and the operator is choosing between two calls that are coming through. Picks yours first. And as they're dealing with you, the other person is trying to call a break-in in progress at their home in North Bend. Or, God forbid, something even worse. But instead of dealing with that call, they're dealing with you. They're dealing with Karen from Snoqualmie. And let's be honest, Karen probably lives in Kirkland, right?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
I'm just saying. I'm not going to throw Issaquah under the bus yet. But I am saying Karens are starting to pop up more on the greater east side than they are in like a Seattle area.
Home of the Karens on the greater east side.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's starting to pop up a little bit more. You all need to do something about it. When we come back, I'm going to introduce you to an American hero. And boy, does she know it. And boy, does everyone tell you that she's a hero. And the one thing we know about heroes, when other people, including the hero themselves, tell you that they're all heroes, it means they're heroes. We'll tell you what this woman did when we come back. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
I need to introduce you to a hero. Her name is Sarah Fuller. Sarah goes to Vanderbilt. Sarah is on the soccer team. By all accounts, she's a very good soccer player. However, she's all in on being, as ESPN puts it, an inspiration for future generations because she's no longer all about soccer. She can now add football player to her resume, well, kicker to her resume.
It's just so exciting, and the fact that I can represent, like, the little girls out there who wanted to do this or, you know, thought about playing football or any sport, really, and it encourages them to be able to step out and do something big like this.
Over the weekend, she became the first woman to play a down of football in one of the five major conferences. In a position she didn't earn, but she got because the football team was decimated by the coronavirus and they were so desperate they turned to her, and now we're pretending that this is some kind of story of triumph because it ticks all of the social justice boxes.
I was just really calm. The SEC championship was more stressful, if I'm going to be honest. But I was really excited to step out on the field and do my thing.
So she kicked something. A punt.
No.
A field goal.
No.
She kicked something.
She kicked off. She did the kickoff.
How many times?
One time.
In doing so, not only made history, but sending a powerful message to girls of all ages.
I mean, I just want to tell, like, all the girls out there that you can do anything you set your mind to. Like, you really can. And if you have that mentality all the way through, like, you can do big things.
You can set your mind to do literally anything. You can do anything if you really, truly just simply set your mind to it. If the team you're playing for is destroyed by COVID, you too can kick the ball one time. You can do anything you set your mind to, even win an SEC game. What was the score of this win? They won, like, by a huge number.
False.
Give me the score. Don't play humble with me.
Okay.
This is a big deal. What was the score?
41-0.
Yes, that is a huge deal for her. Now, granted, she didn't kick any of the field goals, but she started the game off right. Because you know what they say about that opening kick? It sort of sets the standard for the rest of the game. It sets the pace. It sets the tone. They could not have had that big of a win.
Do you want to know why she didn't have any, like, field goals on her stat line or anything?
Because so many touchdowns. And, well, 41, doing the math.
So you should have a few PATs in there, right?
Yeah.
They were the zero part of the game. They had 0 points. She did a kickoff, and then her offense didn't get her into a position to kick a field goal throughout the entire game.
Not once?
Not once. She didn't, like, go 0 for 1 and miss. The only time she was on the field was for the second half kickoff. So it even took an entire half of football to get her out there. Comes out of the locker room, hits what's called a squib kick. Hits it to about, you know, it's about 30, 35, 40 yards.
It's not far.
And the whole point of it is so that there is it's so there is no return from the kick return team. Yeah. And yeah, the ball just kind of stopped. She jogged off the field.
What happened in the second half?
They didn't score at all, and they lost.
So they never had to kick it?
No.
It's an inspirational story right there.
I thought that you would feel inspired by it.
Am I wrong to call this story out in the way it's being framed as a giant step for women in female sports? She's not even the first female football player.
No, but Power Five is a big deal.
Is it a big deal in the context of what happened over the weekend?
No, in the context, it looks really bad.
So context actually matters still. In fact, let's go over some of the context here to make it even more embarrassing for this woman. And I don't blame her, by the way. I blame the people who are feeding into this nonsense that somehow this is this meaningful story. This from the Wall Street Journal. The Commodores are without Orrin Milstein, a kicker who opted out of the 2020 season because of coronavirus concerns. Coach Derek Mason's next most experienced kicker is junior Javon Rice, but he was passed over for a pair of walk-ons. That's not good, right? That's bad.
Yeah, that's bad.
The junior Pearson Cook has handled field goals, making 3 of 7 attempts this year, while junior Wes Farley, who captained his high school soccer team and didn't play prep football, is a perfect 6 for 6 on extra point attempts. Following Vanderbilt's 38-17 loss to Florida last weekend, Mason learned that none of his kickers would be available because of the results of contact tracing. You see, the kicking team, the special teams, they were exposed to the coronavirus. Here's my favorite part about this coach. Here's the quote. The ability to have access to students and have tryouts was almost nil in terms of who was available in terms of everyone going home for the holiday break. I'm not about making statements. This was out of necessity. Oh my gosh. Kudos to him for being honest here. If you are a little girl who wants to play football, awesome. I'm not here to take away that dream. Just don't look to Sarah Fuller as inspiration. She got here out of literal desperation because they had no one else. That is not someone to look up to. You will have someone in probably the near future that will deliver to you that story of inspiration. And you should hold on to that story. Let us not pretend that this is anything more than a series of circumstances that led to a coach making a choice he did not want to make on a team that is awful. Can we at least have an honest conversation about this? Or do we have to pretend that every time something like this happens and it's a quote-unquote first, it has to be an inspiration to us all? This is not inspirational.
Honesty is dead.
Is this inspirational?
I mean,
on issues like this, you're the woke guy on this stuff. This is inspirational?
It's not necessarily inspirational to me. The context makes a huge difference, but I do think it's cool that she was able to suit up and go out there. Do I wish
that? Only because this is the equivalent of her showing up to a soccer game, mm-hmm. but she showed up to the wrong pitch while the boys' team were playing, and she accidentally sat down on the men's side, and they confused her for a player, and she technically was there at kick. That's a total fluke. Nothing having to do with skill level, nothing having to do with appropriateness, not making a statement, nothing. They did this because they literally had no one else, and it was a bad kick.
If she goes 3 for 3 and hits like a 40-yarder, would you have been impressed?
I wouldn't have been impressed, but I would have said, at least this is an actual story that you could point to.
Okay, so you're mad at the media spin on it.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. I don't blame her. I have no issue with her. Kudos to her for doing it. I mean, she goes into a sport where she could have let's be honest, kickers aren't athletes. But I mean, or football players.
No, not at all.
Like, not even a little bit. She could still get hurt. Part of the reason why you don't have women in these sports competing with men who are, I know it's going to make some people on the left uncomfortable, who are not as strong as men, puts them in a position where they can get seriously injured. It's worse when we're talking about football. Because imagine a player, a male, who is much, much bigger, ending up hitting her. That could not. That could go very, very poorly.
Which
it goes poorly for the men in professional football.
Yeah, it does.
So that's why we don't do it. Not because anyone's sexist, because it's just not safe. And she did it anyway. Although maybe she realized that this team just sucks and she probably wouldn't have had to do anything.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our time talking about the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in the city of Kent because the Econo Lodge is back in the news because it's going to be reopening as a quarantine and isolation center for people who are homeless, who got either exposed to the coronavirus or they have the coronavirus and frankly they have nowhere else to go, and we don't want them living out on the streets and or getting on buses and just going anywhere and infecting people. So they go to the Econo Lodge, where they are not compelled to stay and end up getting on the buses and still going out and potentially infecting other people. But this time, we're told it's going to be better. Last time, it was a nightmare. It wasn't properly staffed. The COVID patients were the suspected ones. They kind of just left when they wanted to. They still can. One robbed the 7-Eleven across the street. It was done without the consultation of the mayor, Dana Ralph, who's going to be on the show in a little over an hour to give us her thoughts. But we do know this time around, she says, speaking with King 5, the county is doing things a little bit differently this time.
The county has assured us that they're staffed better, so they're spending more upfront time with folks that are being brought in.
So they're doing some more of the groundwork, laying the foundation, doing the work with the individuals once they actually come to the site. And yet still, there's concern because people work nearby. They've got businesses nearby. They are concerned about crime, rightfully concerned about crime.
Just letting them know and asking them to keep an eye out if there is activity that is occurring that, you know, we think probably shouldn't be.
So she is taking a more glass half full approach to what's going on in the city of Kent when she's on the show. We'll ask her some more detailed questions about why she thinks this time will actually be better of an experience than in the past, because if I'm being honest, based on the way this was handled in the past, I wouldn't have a glass half full approach, despite it being Jason Half Full Rants.
Glass half full rants, back at it again?
Except in this case, not in this case. This is glass broken.
Glass half full.
I walked on top of the glass. Now it's got little shards sticking out of my foot. It hurts. And weirdly, when you pick out a little tiny piece, it hurts like you just pulled out a bullet.
Glass half full rants is oddly 50-50. You know, you think you might find some consistency out of somebody with the name glass half full rants, but really just, you know, it's a 50-50 shot.
Glass half full rants is glass half full.
About being glass half
full. Yeah. Meanwhile, State Patrol is asking people to stop illegally parking on the mountain passes. Stop doing it, folks.
They'll park in no parking areas. They'll block the roadway. And I just really want to get it out there that if you were parked in a no parking zone, your car could get towed.
Your car could get towed. That's Trooper Weber of the State Patrol. He says he's been seeing a lot of it this ski season already. He says a snow-packed mountain pass, probably not the best place to end up getting your car towed.
And it would be something to come back after enjoying and recreating and seeing your car's gone. And you may not have cell phone signal or the lodge is closed. So you need a ride out of here and you won't have one if your car is towed.
I have some thoughts.
Please, please share.
Okay. Let's just go over briefly what it is he just said there. The reasons why you don't want to get towed here, right? No cell phone reception, right? So you're not going to have any cell phone service. You're not going to be able to call the tow truck company to find out any information about where your car is. You're not going to be able to call an Uber. You're not going to be able to call, you know, your friends who maybe live nearby to come pick you up. Can't call a taxi. Okay. The lodge might be closed, which means no one's going to be able to let you inside so you can stay the night or use their phone. It is ski season, which means what about the temperature?
It's cold.
Okay. It gets dark at about 1:30 in the afternoon.
Roughly, yeah.
Should we be towing people then under those circumstances if it likely will lead to them being killed?
Yes, Jason. No one is above the law. No one is above the law.
I normally take that position of, hey, dude, you're going to get towed because you're breaking the law. But when you're so specific and blunt about essentially saying you're going to die if we tow your car, should we maybe rethink the towing part and maybe triple down on the ticket part?
There's consequences to parking illegally, and sometimes it's death.
It's freezing to death in the mountain passes.
Look, there's different rules when you get that high above sea level.
Seriously,
okay?
Listen to the trooper.
And it would be something to come back after enjoying and recreating and seeing your car's gone, and you may not have cell phone signal or the lodge is closed, so you need a ride out of here and you won't have one if your car is towed.
So what are they supposed to do at that point?
I love this
just
cop.
Lay down and die and just give in, be one with nature. There's nothing to be done. I suppose you can make the walk, but that's a long walk. And you're probably going to freeze to death on the way down.
Hopefully you were a Boy Scout and you can start a fire. If not, you're in some trouble.
Am I wrong on this one? Is that not a weird message? Just don't say it that way.
Surely it's more than just inconveniently parking. I'm sure the plows can't get through with all the cars built up on the sides.
I'm not saying that there isn't an underlying issue that is being addressed by the towing. I'm simply saying you're kind of acknowledging that by towing, you're leaving the person to die.
Oh, well.
Okay, fine. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show right here on KTTH. Of course, if you miss any moment of the show, you can always subscribe to the podcast. In fact, if you text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-877, he'll go ahead and send you a link so you can subscribe. I want to tell you the story of Tony Piloceno. He lost his part-time job. He's a college student. He lost his part-time job at a local Sherwin-Williams paint store out in Athens, Ohio. And the story has gone viral thanks to a feature in BuzzFeed, which is ironic because that story has gone viral after he was fired for going viral because of his TikTok videos. TikTok videos that ultimately would get him fired. Now, he's got 1.2 million followers on TikTok, an app that allows you to share some videos to other people who are incredibly bored and just looking for anything to pass the time throughout their day while not being concerned that their information is being funneled through communist Chinese regimes. Pushing that aside, he's got 1.2 million followers on TikTok, and all he does is create content that shows you how to mix paint.
This is how I make rose gold paint.
Oh.
Add blue.
Uh-huh.
You know, add some red.
Okay. She
said, and fill the rest with violet.
That's it. And I bet
you got home. Now give her a good blend.
Okay. Fascinating. You don't know me like that. I just go with the flow. He's just stirring it now while we listen to bad music. Said, you can't fool me like that. 1.2.
Let me know what colors you want to see next.
I don't want to see anything next. 1.2 million followers for this? And yet I only have like 61,000 followers on Twitter, and I'm actually putting out good content. Now, according to BuzzFeed, they're reporting that Tony said for months he'd been pointing to his viral account as an example of what Sherwin-Williams could do on social media and by marketing their brand to a younger demographic. That's exactly what he was doing. But apparently they were not happy. BuzzFeed says corporate ended up investigating his account and then fired him from making the videos during his work hours and using company equipment. He was fired for, quote, gross misconduct. And that included the offenses of, quote, wasting property and facilities, plus seriously embarrassing the company or its products. Now, according to BuzzFeed, Tony had admitted that he filmed these TikTok videos while he was there at work, but he said he was already mixing the paints for customers when he first started posting to his channel. This happened back in December of 2019. That's when he started. By the way, that's good growth, 1.2 million in under a year. But they say as his page grew, he committed to purchasing cans of paint with his employee discount. He said, they first accused me of stealing. I told them I purchased all my paint. They made me answer a bunch of questions like when I was doing this, where there was anyone in the store while I was doing the filming. There was never anyone with me while I was doing it. Sometime in March or April, Tony said he began assessing his TikTok account as, quote, a marketing opportunity for Sherwin-Williams. And so BuzzFeed, in this article that is filled with spelling and grammatical errors, said he created a pitch deck, quote, to show the company how TikTok has a younger base and to basically develop brand awareness through TikTok. Which, I suppose, one could say that's a precocious young chap. He's trying to make something for the company. Look at him. And so he said he presented the pitch to his manager and a sales rep at the store, and they apparently loved it, or at least they pretended to, in order to get him to stop insufferably pitching his really bad ideas to them. So he was given a contact in the marketing department of the company's headquarters, according to BuzzFeed. Or he was given a contact in the marketing department of the company's headquarters so that someone else can be bothered with his near daily pitches. He said, I emailed the marketing contact about two or three times. I even reached out to him on LinkedIn. It took 2 months to get a response from him. He basically told me that there wasn't really any promotions going on, so there wasn't a need to see the presentation. That means you were blown off. However, it was more than just a blow off. Because about a month later, after these emails, after the LinkedIn messages, BuzzFeed says he received a call from the loss prevention department. They looked into his TikTok account. And apparently the combination of his marketing pitch and the calls to the company would get about experimental paint mixing inspired by his TikToks had put the company on high alert, according to BuzzFeed. So they looked into it, didn't like it. They ended up getting rid of him. Now, if you're concerned about his financial well-being, he has already received another job offer at a different paint store in the area, to which I believe as of a couple days ago, he has accepted. So he's got another job. Pushing that aside, this is the right move. Sorry, I know there are going to be a lot of people who maybe think I'm a curmudgeon on stuff like this. I'm hoping there's going to be more people who agree with me, though. This kid decided to create content for a side gig, essentially, even though he wasn't getting paid for it. But he was creating content for a side gig on company time. He didn't get permission to do it. He didn't even have anyone from corporate showing any interest in what it was that he was doing. And yet, he is somehow being perceived and framed, at least by BuzzFeed and some other folks on Twitter, because this was trending on Twitter. He's being perceived and framed as some kind of victim. And Sherwin-Williams, they're the bad guys here. No, they're not. I could have saved him a whole bunch of time and energy and effort by telling him this would be a bad idea for Sherwin-Williams. You want to know why? College students aren't spending money at Sherwin-Williams. If they're going to go ahead and go buy painting supplies, probably not going to Sherwin-Williams for their homes. You know why? Because they don't own homes. They don't own homes. Now, maybe they're buying paint because they want to paint their dorm wall or an apartment that they're sharing with four other guys or four other women. They're going to go to the Home Depot. They're going to go to a lower end, cheaper space. They're not going to go to Sherwin-Williams. At least as far as I know about Sherwin-Williams, that is a higher end brand of paint store. They're not looking to go after a younger demographic. Now, say what you will about that strategy. You can say it's bad. You can say it's wrong. You can say that they're not thinking ahead. They're not thinking about their future. Okay, fine. But that is their decision to make. That is their decision to make. As is whether or not they want to pay someone to create content for a side gig. Whether or not he or she gets paid doesn't matter. He was presumptuous. He got a little bit too ahead of himself. He got a little bit too big. And they ended up saying, yeah, we're not impressed. I think there are a lot of people, particularly of his age, because this is a college age kid. There are a lot of people, younger people, who think if they show any even semblance of initiative, that automatically people who are older are going to be impressed. Now, in a lot of ways, I understand that, right? Because a lot of younger folks who are in the workplace tend to lack that kind of initiative. They do. I know a lot of younger people don't like us pointing that out, but guess what? I'm technically a millennial at 38 years old. I'm on the cusp. I still count. I get to call us out. Millennials are lazy overall. They're selfish and they're lazy. So any sense of initiative, I too look at that and say, hey, that's actually a good deal. I like it. I dig it. I can dig it. I'm in. But you still have to back up the initiative with good ideas, with reasonable ideas, with a sense of direction. You still have to come on board and fit into the culture of the company that you're trying to show initiative to. And if you don't, you get some extra points for the initiative, but you only get so many points before you become a pain in the backside. And I guarantee you that this guy, because I have a similar personality as he does, I can, as far as being persistent, I can tell, and I'm a pain in the backside, I can guarantee you he was sending a whole bunch of messages to this marketing guy, and the marketing guy probably just got really, really annoyed, forwarded it to the loss prevention guy, and just said, hey, can you look into this? Something fishy about this guy. He's a little bit too eager. Almost like he's hiding something. So it ended fine for Tony. He probably got another 1.4, 1.2 million followers on his TikTok account. TikTok account. That butt. Peyton, set me up. Set up a TikTok. Yeah, set up a TikTok account. But put it on your phone, because I don't want the Chinese communist regime getting my information. I don't care if they get yours. Don't give me a look. Just do it. If you were precocious like this young man, maybe you wouldn't be stuck in that room producing this show. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. I'll be on Tucker Carlson later tonight. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. I'll send out the link to the video around 6:15, probably closer to 6:15. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Got another hour of the show coming up. But first, got to pay the bills. It's The Jason Rant Show.